Welcome to Supernatural Stocks on MoneyWeb with your host, The Finance Ghost. This is your weekly fix of equity analysis designed for stock pickers. Whether local or international, you can expect a mix of news and my ideas about what I'm seeing in the markets. This week, the news broke of exactly how much pain Spar will need to suffer to get out of Spar Switzerland. It feels like a bad handover from the Poland deal in which Spar had to incur huge additional costs just to get rid of the thing. Once again in Switzerland, we have a situation where the investment was like a BEE deal gone wrong, underwater and with no hope of getting the asset value ahead of the outstanding legacy acquisition debt. Credit where credit is due though, at least the management team isn't stubbornly trying to trade out of the position. They aren't allowing things to get worse. The old story in the markets of your first loss is your best loss is highly applicable here, and Spar is getting out while they can. Of course, it's always easier for this to happen when the management team has changed. A new CEO can easily point to the mistakes of a predecessor and talk about how a tough situation is now being cleaned up, which makes it a lot easier to answer spicy questions from analysts. Spar is just the latest example of a terrible outcome of an offshore acquisition strategy, but it's by no means the only example or even the worst example. When I worked in advisory, I always found it odd that the commemorative award at the end of a deal was known as a tombstone. Having spent more than a decade of my life seeing the full life cycle of deals and how these things often play out for corporates, it feels like an ironically appropriate name. In far too many cases, M&A is where shareholder value goes to die. But then, why does anyone do these large deals? If they were all terrible, then obviously there would be no demand for acquisitions and shareholders would never support them, so clearly that's not the case. This means that they must work in certain cases and that some management teams are clearly getting them right. But what are some of the red flags to look out for when deals are announced? How can you spot the ones that might really hurt you down the line? First up, the weird test. Now, you might have expected me to start with talking about the price for the deal, but I'm not sure that that is the best indicator of success or failure. You see, a poor strategic fit at a good price is probably as damaging over the long term as a good strategic fit at the wrong price. It's just harder to see it because the cost of management distraction and strategic confusion doesn't have its own line on the income statement. There is obviously an extreme scenario in which management just hopelessly overpays for an asset, but more on that later. Within any kind of reasonable price range, both good and bad, my view is that strategic fit matters at least as much as price, if not more. How often do you hear companies talking about the disposal of non-core assets? This term is an absolute favorite when management teams are trying to paper over the cracks of a really bad legacy deal, leaving them with an asset that they don't want to own anymore, usually one that destroyed shareholder value along the way. It's amazing how the words non-core somehow create distance between the company and this messy situation, even though shareholders have been exposed to it throughout the process. Today's non-core business was once upon a time described to the market as a sensible strategic acquisition. So to avoid a situation where that freshly announced deal ends up as a non-core disposal in years to come, it's good to apply the weird test. Quite simply, asking yourself whether the deal actually makes sense or whether it's a bit weird. Should the company be buying an asset like this? Does the strategic rationale make sense, or does it seem like they are stretching here? Are there believable synergies? Do the brands fit well together? What is the size of the deal relative to the rest of the group? Is the deal weird? Smell test, weird test, call it what you will. It's about your gut feel. Our gut feels are often right, despite the efforts of 20-page slide decks to convince us otherwise. We now move on to the incentives of the parties involved. Charlie Munger's quote on incentives comes up all the time and with such good reason. The late great investor really did impart an absolute pearl of wisdom when he said, "Show me the incentive and I'll show you the outcome." Is management of the acquirer incentivized based on metrics like revenue growth without any kind of carve-out for acquisitions? That would be the most basic and ridiculous situation, of course, with a remuneration committee that is completely asleep at the wheel. But you would be shocked at how often a version of this happens. Guess what? If you pay management to go and find revenue, they will go and find it. And if they overpay for it, shareholders are left with a problem. Now let's use a less blunt example and consider the sellers instead. When a seller is only willing to sell 100% of a business and won't accept any kind of earn-out payments, these are future payments based on meeting conditions linked to, for example, profitability, then what does that tell you about the underlying business? Conversely, what does it tell you if the seller is keen to sell only a minority stake initially, testing the waters with the new partner and working together for the next few years towards a full exit? In this case, doesn't it sound to you like the seller has much stronger belief in the future of the business and wants to stick around to get paid for it? Let me give you a very real-world example that might be easier to understand. If you are selling a car that you know has significant problems, will you sell it to a close family member or rather a faceless dealer while you run away as fast as possible in the opposite direction? What if it only has minor problems, but the dealer asked you whether you wanted to get paid up front or only when the car is sold with a potentially higher amount if you accept the deferred payment? You're probably going to take the upfront cash if you know the car is in poor shape, and you might do the latter deal if you know that it's a great car that should fetch a strong price, a price that you would like to participate in. It's exactly the same thing when someone is selling a business, yet for some reason management teams will happily buy 100% of a business they know nothing about, with only a small part of the purchase price linked to earnouts. It's an incentivization and alignment problem above all else. When management is properly invested in the business they are running, you rarely see nonsense like this. Instead, you see sensible deals in which there's a pathway to control, a spread of payments over time, and the creation of a strong working relationship with the seller. Munger was right. Listen to him and apply those learnings and assess where the incentivization lies in the deal, and that is on both sides of the deal. And yes, before you get worried, the price does matter and we are going to talk about it briefly. That's because we are obviously doing a very high-level overview here, because there are entire textbooks dedicated to M&A and there's no chance of us covering all of the nuances in one or even 10 of these podcasts. The funny thing is that you're unlikely to find anything about the weird test or the incentivization in university textbooks. You need to see the stuff play out in practice for better or worse. That's what helps. Now, one area that has no shortage of academic material is, of course, valuations, which leads us to price. You'll also find loads of stuff about exchange ratios in share-for-share deals, which means there are then two valuations to worry about: the valuation of the asset being acquired and the value of the shares being issued to pay for it. Luckily, there is a way to do a quick and dirty test on the valuation as well. All you need to do is ask yourself whether this deal is in an area of the market that is suffering from hype. Hype can take many forms. When Spar acquired Spar Switzerland roughly a decade ago, the hype was all around offshore assets. Every management team was being forced to put together an offshore strategy, and this creates a very worrying situation for asset pricing, linked to the incentivization point earlier. Again, there are loads of examples on the JSE of this going wrong. The valuation of a business might be academic in nature, but the price for a deal is the result of a negotiation. And in a negotiation, it's all about who holds the power. This is exactly why deal assessments should always start with the strategy and the incentives long before looking at the price. By the time you've worked through the first two, the price will make a lot more sense either way. And as a good rule of thumb, treat all acquisitions with suspicion until proven otherwise. Unfortunately, many of them do end badly. There's no such thing as an opportunity without risk, and these are merely my opinions on the stocks covered herein. Make sure that you do your own research, form your own views on the market when doing anything in your portfolio. Nothing in supernatural stocks should be taken as advice.